And welcome back to the last half hour of the Mike McFeely Show. It has been such a pleasure having this chance to be the guest host. I hope I get a chance to do it again. Mike, as you know, is at an undisclosed location. I want to do a quick shout out to my friend Shyla Schaefer, the most faithful of all friends and listeners. And I want to thank Wayne Stengem for being available today. You know, I agree with him. I think he's one of our most remarkable public servants. I've had a chance to get to know him in the last few months, and we are very well served in North Dakota to have Wayne Stengem as our Attorney General. And so I trust what he says. At the same time, I do lament that one North Dakota is passing away and probably passing away forever. My mother is 82. She lives in Dickinson. She's one of the toughest and most independent persons I've ever known. And yet she now has real concerns about crime. And for the first time in her life, she's locking her car door when she stops anywhere in Dickinson. She also locks her door at night, which she has never done historically. Something that we all cherish in the North Dakota way of life is disappearing. And although I agree with Attorney General Stengem that some of these things are beyond the oil boom, we know that they're being largely directed by that magnetism the oil boom has created in Western North Dakota. The profile of a criminal is someone who's male between the ages of 18 and 40. That's where testosterone really can create mayhem when it's associated with money and alcohol and drugs. And you know, this state is changing, and I think we need to be honest about that and to lament that at the same time that we realize that the crime rate here is still comparatively lower than, say, Southern California or Newark, New Jersey. But those are hardly comforting statistics. Now I want to turn to Dr. Wayne Warren, who is a Native American from Kyle, South Dakota, an enrolled member of the Ogallala Lakota tribe. And this interesting news release came across our desk saying that you are the University, North Dakota State University here in Fargo, has created an advanced degree for students looking to improve the health of American Indians. And then there's a quotation from Dr. Warren that says, "We have an incredible lack of understanding about Native American health issues." So I wanted him to come on and explain that. Welcome, Dr. Warren.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's very good to be with you.
I'm so glad you're here. So tell us what you mean by that, an incredible lack of understanding about Native American health issues.
Well, as you know, there's a lot going on in the world of healthcare and certainly with healthcare reform, and a lot of issues certainly make it to front page news and other media outlets. One of the things that's not very well understood in the general population is that American Indians are the only population that is actually born with a legal right to healthcare, and that's based on treaties in which the tribes exchange vast amounts of land and natural resources for various social services, including housing, education, and healthcare. So that's why there's a BIA, a Bureau of Indian Affairs, and that's why there's an IHS.
The Indian Health Service. Right.
Yeah, exactly. So essentially, I look at the Indian Health Service as the largest prepaid health plan in history, because if you look at all of the land and natural resources that make this country very wealthy, those are American Indian resources, and they were exchanged for services like health care. And I think that's just not very well understood in the general population. You know, why is there an Indian health service?
So misunderstanding one is that Indians are entitled by treaty right to federally enabled Indian health care, and that the non-Indian population doesn't always understand that this is a treaty right. This is not a privilege. This is a right.
Exactly. And some people equate it to a welfare program. It's certainly not that. When the treaties were signed, the tribal leaders gave up a lot in terms of resources and land and territory, and they did that for future generations to be able to have access to these services, including health care. And I think one of the challenges that we face is that we have a legal right to health care, but the Indian Health Service is terribly underfunded. If you compare the per capita expenditure for someone on Medicare, which is closer to $8,000 per person per year, versus Indian Health Service, which is a little over $2,000 per person per year, we can see there's a tremendous disparity in actual access to services for health care.
So give us that statistic again.
Close to about $8,000 per person per year on Medicare.
Okay.
And a little over $2,000 per American Indian who uses Indian Health Service.
Okay, so when I look at this from the outside, and I'm not a Native American, I'm fascinated by Native American history and culture. Of course, in North Dakota, we're blessed by having a very large Indian population. When I look at this from the outside, Dr. Warren, I see, and maybe I'm wrong, tell me if I'm wrong, that the average Indian's health is not as good as the average non-Indian's health. Is that true?
That's absolutely true. And it's true particularly in North Dakota and South Dakota, where I'm from. But in North Dakota, for example, if you look at data from the North Dakota Department of Health, the average age at death for the white population is 75.7 years. The average age at death for American Indians is 54.7 years.
That's 21 years difference.
21 years difference.
That's a shocking statistic.
It really is. And one of the things that I'm, I've worked in public health and medicine for many years, and one of the things I'm disappointed in is the lack of understanding, even among public health academic arenas. So the schools of public health don't really seem to understand this either. And what I tell them is that you do not have to cross an ocean to find third world health conditions. And it's remarkable how much money we spend as a nation on third world health care. And we essentially ignore the fact that we have third world health conditions right here in North Dakota.
You know, here's what's remarkable to me, and I couldn't agree with you more. The complacency of the non-Indian population in the face of a statistic like this, a 21-year difference in the lifespan of a Native American versus a non-Native American. Also, you know, epidemic and diabetes, obesity rates, poor diet. We're going to have to take a break here in about 2 minutes. But before we do that, explain to us the situation as you see it and how a program like the one that you are now directing at NDSU can help.
Well, most of the reasons that we have high rates of disease and early death are preventable. So things like obesity, diabetes, alcohol-related deaths, infant mortality, smoking-related deaths, those are preventable. And the purpose of medicine is to treat disease, and the purpose of public health is to prevent disease. And at NDSU, here in Fargo, we have the very first American Indian Public Health Program. So the entire focus of that particular track is to ensure that we're preparing people to be public health professionals to focus on how we can best prevent disease and promote health in the American Indian population. And there's no other program in the nation that has yet tried to tackle that task.
Congratulations. I think this is so important. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, I want to ask you how big the staff is, what sort of activities are engaged here, and what you are doing specifically to help solve these problems. This is where Mike McFeely says, we have reached the home stretch of the Mike McFeely Show. I'm your guest host, Clay Jenkins, in a fascinating, although sobering, conversation with Dr. Donald Warren, who is from Kyle, South Dakota. He's an enrolled member of the Ogallala Lakota tribe. And Dr. Warren, I want to ask you, you gave us that really horrific statistic that the average Native American lives for 54 years, the average non-Indian in this country lives for almost 76 years, a difference of more than 21 years. You know, Robert Kennedy came to North Dakota, to Bismarck, in September of 1963. He was the attorney general, and he said, shame on you that there can be a third world enclave within a prosperous first world country. And he could just as well be giving that that lecture to the people of North Dakota today. But you know, you grew up in South Dakota, you know, the average non-Indian is going to say, well, maybe Indians should clean up their act. Aren't these choices about diabetes and too much sugar and too much smoking and too much alcohol and too sedentary a life? Answer that usual challenge that's offered at this moment.
Yeah, that certainly does come up frequently. And one of the things to remember is that when people are living in poverty, we actually don't have the same types of choices as those who are not living in poverty. So that's an issue that reaches across racial and ethnic divides. Yeah, so poverty really is a huge predictor.
Poverty is more important than race.
In many cases, that's absolutely true. Of course, when we look at the most impoverished populations in the Dakotas, it is the American Indian populations. And so when we look at things like, well, make healthier diet choices, if people don't have access to healthy foods, then we just don't have access to healthy choices. So there are certain circumstances where we don't have that. And certainly having underfunded schools and lack of access to healthy food in the schools. That has a huge impact as well, whether you're American Indian.
And there's a history in the rationing system of government providing bad choices to Native peoples. Okay, yeah. So I agree with all of that, of course. So you have a huge problem, an epidemic, and now you're creating this entity at NDSU. How will this group, this advanced degree that you are helping to lead, focus on this problem and make things better?
Yeah, absolutely. And I appreciate that the discussion doesn't end at the challenges and the health disparities.
No, you're part of the solution, right?
Absolutely. There's things that can be done about it. So our program is a Master of Public Health program. And we actually have four tracks, including community health sciences, health promotion, management of infectious diseases, and American Indian public health. And we just started the American Indian public health track this fall. We currently, when we combine our first and second year students, we have 6 American Indians enrolled in our Master of Public Health program, which is among the largest classes of any MPH program nationally in history. So we're very proud of the fact that we're doing a good job recruiting.
And I'm guessing that Native Americans are going to be coming from all over the country and beyond to this unique program.
Absolutely. One of our students, actually, we offer it through distance education. So she takes our coursework while she's living and working in California. So this is a nationally focused program with a special emphasis, of course, on the Northern Plains, because this is the region where we're located, but also the region where we have the worst health status. So within our program, it's myself as well as 2 other American Indian faculty, Donna Granboys, who is from Turtle Mountain, Chippewa, also here in North Dakota, and then Linda Frizzell, who is a member of the Cherokee and Lakota Nations as well. So for each of our 4 tracks, there has to be at least 3 faculty members in order to be an accredited program. So we have 3 American Indian faculty members here, and when you combine our experience, we have well over 50 years of experience in American Indian health at the doctorate level. And that's really unmatched in the nation.
And I take it that although a number of these students will be Native Americans, Indians, not everybody has to be an Indian to be in this program.
That's exactly right. And one of the things I'm very proud of our 6 American Indian students, 2 are in other tracks. And we also have one non-Indian student who's doing the American Indian track because she wants to work in Indian health for her career. So I think that that's a very wise thing for us to do, is that we need many people to be involved in addressing American Indian health disparities, and we need American Indians in multiple disciplines of public health. So that's one of the things we're very proud of.
So you're just getting started, and you have a relatively small number of students so far. They'll be trained, they'll fan out, and then what will they do when they actually get out into Indian country?
Well, when we look at our overall program, we actually have 22 students in our second year that includes the American Indian non-Indian students. So of the 22, 6 are American Indian. And they'll be working in areas where they can focus on preventing disease and managing programs. So, for example, job opportunities with the American Indian Public Health Track, they could be tribal health directors, they could be clinic CEOs, they could be diabetes program managers, they could be research assistants. There's a whole arena of public health opportunities that historically, because of lack of training specific to American Indian public health, we haven't been able to fill those positions with highly qualified people in some cases. So we're creating a cohort of future public health professionals that can make an impact on improving health status.
That's fantastic. And I know there's a lot of poverty in Indian country, but I'm guessing that it's not that difficult to place these graduates.
That's exactly right. We definitely have people who will be in demand, and we're getting a lot of national attention as well. The article that you had mentioned that was published in the Bismarck Tribune was actually through AP, so it was also in the Washington Times and in newspapers all over the nation. We have been getting more inquiries about our program from people all over the nation, and we're really looking forward to having NDSU be the leader in this arena.
Now, it's such an important thing, you know, in North Dakota that NDSU, unique in this country, is creating this initiative, and that this will probably make a difference. If you can do this, I take it you believe that this is a problem that can actually be solved.
Absolutely. These are preventable causes of death. And when we look at our health status currently, of course, we're many decades behind the non-Indian population in terms of things like life expectancy. But those things can be improved. And the area of focus needs to be on public health and prevention and promoting positive health behaviors. It can't just be the medical focus. We can't look at just medications to solve these issues. I am a medical doctor and also have training in public health. And having that wide range of experience, just in my own professional experience, I know that we're much better off investing in prevention than we are just waiting until problems occur and then trying to treat them after the fact.
Absolutely. Dr. Warren, I'm so pleased that you were able to take some time this afternoon to give us a little short course in what you're doing at NDSU. We want you to come back on this program. I'll pass that on to Mike McFeely. I think this deserves a lot more time than we're able to give it, but it's important. I think that at least you've gotten a chance to speak to a very large number of North Dakotans and Minnesotans about this significant impact that's going to come from the program at NDSU. Thank you for being on today. I take it as a final question, you're not in favor of the Washington Redskins maintaining that name?
Absolutely not. That's a whole other long discussion.
It's a long discussion, but it's time, isn't it, to retire that thing?
Yeah, certainly. It's very offensive.
Thanks for being on the program today.
Yeah.
We'll talk to you again.
Appreciate the time.
Wow, Pinto.